Okay, we're beginning here on the last line of Chaf Aleph Amud Bet. Yesterday we left off with the din of someone who joins a party who is already be'avilut. They are also chayav to be an avel, but they were not aware of the information when the avilut started. And the Gemara tells us here that if he comes from a makom karov, if he comes from a place that is proximate, nearby, then he joins the other avilim, and his count of shiva is similar to the count of shiva of those that are already sitting shiva, who had the information prior to him. That, according to the Tanakham, was only true if he shows up within the first 3 days, which is the Ikar Avilut. But if he comes after the first 3 days, that's not the case. Rabbi Shimon argued on him, and Rabbi Shimon says that the Koveya is the 7 days of Avilut. As long as he shows up within the 7 days of Avilut, that's sufficient to have him join the existing Avilim, and his count would only go as long as their count. Now, as we've seen elsewhere in Avilut, the halacha is always kedivrei ha-mekil, and therefore the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon over here, that as long as you show up within the 7 days of Avilut, with the one qualifier that on the 7th day, since it's mitzvah hayom kekulo, that you still have to have people there that are consoling the Avilim in order that it still be considered Avilut. If they've already finished their Avilut because of mitzvah hayom kekulo, you can't then say that the person who joins them is also done with their shiva, because he never got there while they were sitting shiva. What is considered to be close by, according to Rashi, the Rif, and others, it is Yom Echad. It means 1 day's journey, which is 10 parsaot away. So long as you were within 1 day of where the Avilim are sitting Shiva, even though you didn't know the information, when you show up and join them, then your Avilut continues with the same duration as the Avilut of those that are already sitting. Because if you are within a 1 day's journey of where the Avilim are sitting, had you known the information, you could have joined them. Whereas if you come from a makom rachok, you come from a distant place, then no matter what, you can't join their count, because even if you had known the information, you wouldn't have been able to get there in time to start counting with them. Then the Gemara made a qualification which said, "Vehu sheish gadol abayit babayit." That's as long as the leader of the house is in the house. The leader of the house, gadol b'shabayit, is a loosely defined term, and actually has nafkaminot la'alocha. But it is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch that it's the individual who economically supports the family and gives guidance to the family. There are others that want to define it more loosely. Someone who is an older brother that you go to for advice instead of a father. Or does it really connect it to the economic side that he is the financial supporter of the whole family? And because of the differences, it will actually have enough nafkamina as to whether there is a concept of Gadol HaBayit today, which we'll speak about in a couple minutes. But here the Gemara says that the qualification in order for this to be the determining shiva is that the gadol habayit, the leader of the family, must be sitting shiva with those that are there. And that is what allows other people to join in that shiva, because everyone else is subordinate to the leader of the family. So since he's sitting shiva here, anybody shows up later, as long as they're from a makom makarov, they join that shiva, and their shiva only goes to the duration of the group or the individuals that are already sitting shiva when they get the news. So now the Gemara asks a question. It's a difficult question. The answer is also somewhat difficult. We're going to work through it. The Rishonim have many different opinions here. But this actually has nafkaminot halacha that we're going to see towards the end of this sugya, because that's a case or a practice that happens all the time today. So yibay luhu. Halach gadol abayit beit akvarot mahu. The gadol abayit goes to the beit akvarot. He goes to bury the mate. What is the din? In that a group of individuals stay behind, they do not go to the Beit HaKvarot, but the Gadol HaBayit does go out to the Beit HaKvarot. So Tashma, Damar Rabbi Chiya Bava, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Afilo Alach Gadol HaBayit the Beit HaKvarot, even if the leader of the household goes out to the cemetery, Mone Imahen, he joins their count. Mone Imahen, he joins their count. Vatanyo of a bright that says Mone Le'atzmo, he keeps his own count. So here we have a stira or a machloket in the Braitot as to what is the status of the gadol shebabayit that goes out to bury the mate. When he goes out and he takes the mate and he buries the mate, those that are staying behind begin their avilut, which we're going to see in a second. And since their avilut has begun already, when the gadol habayit returns, does he join them and become a party to their shiva? Or does he have to keep a separate count of shiva? So here, one Braita says, Munei Mahen, he joins them, and his shiva is the same duration as theirs. And one of the Braita says, Munei Le'atzmo, that he has to count independently, because he's not subordinate, or he's not connected to those groups. So when it says, Lokasho, Had ata begotilata, vahadalo ata begotilata. That depends if he shows up within 3 days, or he does not show up within 3 days. If he comes back within 3 days at the beginning of the Avilut, he joins the existing Avilut that's there, and his Shiva will only last as long as there's Shiva less. On the other hand, if he comes after the 3 day period, then he has to count on his own, mone liatzmo. Had amarlu rab dibne atzalfuni. That's what Rab told these individuals, the atu bigo tlato. If you come within 3 days, limnu badaichu, then they should count along with you. De lo atu bigo tlato. If you don't come within 3 days, limnu linafshayu. They should count on their own. Right now I'm just going to finish up the Gemara and then we'll come back and discuss what the issues are here. Amr lehu Rava livnei mechuza. Rava told the bnei mechuza, atan de lo azlitu batar arso. You who do not take the mate, accompany the mate out to the burial. From the moment that you turn your face away from the Avilim, away from the gate of the city, you should begin counting the Avilut. Now what's said here by Rova, again, has major implications today, but the case of shipping the body away from where you are to be buried in another location. So, for instance, there's a city where you have the mate. They send off the mate. Some of the people accompany the mate, then they're going to go take them to wherever the destination is to bury the mate. In the meantime, there are those that remain in the city, Avilim, for this mate that remain in the city, and they have walked away, they've turned their heads away from the mate. Rava says, as soon as you do that, you become an Avel, and your Avilut starts counting. So even though, in general, we know that Avilut only starts Mishista Magolel, that's once the mate is buried, whether that means putting the rock in front of the catacombs, whether that means that you are putting the dirt on top of the Aron, or whether that means that you seal the Aron, whatever the meaning of Yistama Golel is, that is the beginning of Eilut. So here, why are they beginning of Eilut when there's not Yistama Golel? It's very likely that the mate may not be buried for another couple of days, for another week, and yet they're starting of Eilut right away. So what Rav is Mechadesh here is that once you turn away from the mate, and basically you are Mitya Ish, you give up any interaction with the mate, you're not going to be there, you're not going to make the difference in the mate being buried. At that point in time, it's the equivalent of Mishtistama Golel. It's the equivalent of the burial of the mate. And therefore, your Avilut is triggered, and your Avilut begins at that moment in time. So the example that the Gemara gives is that people who sent from Bavel sent their mate back to Eretz Yisrael to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Same practice that goes on today. So when they sent the body to go to Eretz Yisrael, if those individuals who accompany the body turn around and go back home, they don't continue with the mate to Eretz Yisrael, their Avelut begins right away. Those that are accompanying the body will not start their Avelut until Achi Yistoma Golel, until the mate is buried. But now Argamar qualifies and says, well, that depends on those that are burying the mate. If they bury it within 3 days, no matter how far away or close it is, if they bury it within 3 days and come back to the original Avelim, then their count is the same as those Avelim. On the other hand, if it takes them more than 3 days to return to where the Avilim are sitting, they make their own count, they do their own count in terms of Shiva, and it does not become a part of the original Shiva that is set by those individuals. So now, one of the major questions here, which really precipitates the different opinions amongst the Rishonim, is that, didn't we just paskin like Rabbi Shimon? Rabbi Shimon says that no matter when you show up during the Avilut, you count along with those individuals that are there already. So why over here, all of a sudden, do we have this qualification of 3 days? Why is 3 days relevant if you're paskening like Rabbi Shimon? Why should it be that if you come back within 3 days, you're counted? And if you don't come back within 3 days, you have to count on your own. Why is that true? Why is 3 days relevant? We pasken like Rabbi Shimon. It should be 7 days, not 3 days. So in order to reconcile that, you will come up with numerous different opinions amongst the Rishonim as to what's happening here. The Baal HaMor points this out and says that the Rif, and it's true of the Rambam as well, do not quote this latter half of the Gemara, lo halacha. They don't quote this din with halach gadol de beit akvarot. They ignore it completely. They leave it out. The Baal HaMor surmises from that that the Rif believes that the two halves of the Gemara argue. The first half of the Gemara, where we paskin like Rabbi Shimon, who says that you wait until the seventh day, argues with this latter half of the Gemara, which says that 3 days is the threshold. The whole discussion over here is according to the Tanakhama, according to the one who says that 3 days is the threshold, but we paskin like Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, the Baal HaMor concludes, that's why the Rif, that's why the Rambam left that piece out of Halacha, because they think it argues on the previous Gemara. The Baal HaMor himself says he disagrees, and he thinks that the two are reconcilable, because one of them is talking about a case where there's another person in the family who's not the Gadol HaBayit, is coming to join the Avilut that is there. So since the Gadol HaBayit is a part of those Avilim that are already there, and everybody else is subordinate to him, therefore when anybody shows up, even if they show up on the seventh day, they're going to be subordinated to the Gadol HaBayit, and therefore their Shiva will terminate with everybody else on the seventh day. On the other hand, over here, we're talking about a case where the Gadol HaBayit himself went to the Beit HaKvarot. So the Gadol HaBayit is no longer here in the Bayit. He's not with that group that's there. And therefore, since it's the Gadol HaBayit himself, then 3 days become significant in of themselves for the Gadol HaBayit. And if he comes back within 3 days, he can join them. If he comes after 3 days, he can't join them, because he doesn't have the Gadol HaBayit back at the house to establish that that is the minyan, that is definitely the shiva, because he's the one out burying the mate. And therefore the Gadol HaBayit is not in the bayit, so the din of Rabbi Shimon is no longer applicable, and the 3 days is a threshold for that situation. So that's how the Baal HaMor reconciles them, and says that they're actually, the two parts of the sugya are not arguing on each other. On the other hand, the Milchamot, so the Ramban agrees with the Baal HaMor, and he says, I don't know why the Rif left us out. But he agrees with the assumption that the Baal HaMor made about the Rif's opinion, the Rambam's opinion, that the two parts of the sugya argue. That the first part of the sugya says 7 days, like Rabbi Shimon. This latter half of the sugya says 3 days, which is the Tanna Kamma's opinion. Therefore, the Ramban says that the latter half of the Gemara is correct. Just exchange 3 for 7. And this is what he says. Machar shekvar shema, v'yayim ahem b'shal shechal aleim ha'avilut. Since the Gadol HaBayit was with them when the Avilut began, this is not similar to someone coming from somewhere else. Therefore, there's no differentiation between whether the cemetery is far away or close by. Because he was there with the other group of people when they started the Avilut, because he took leave of them with the mate. So he was there when they heard about the news and when they started their Avilut. The Gadol HaBayit only starts, and doesn't necessarily have to be the Gadol HaBayit, it's anybody who accompanied the mate, their Avilut will not start until the mate is actually buried. But if he returns to them, he counts along with those people that started the Avilut earlier. The Tana Kama called Gimel, according to the Tana Gamel for 3 days, the Rabbi Shimon called Zayin. And so you see that Ramban takes the Rabbi Shimon from the previous Gemara, and now imposes him on this Gemara and says, as long as the Gadol HaBayit gets back from the burial within these 7 days of Shiva, he will stop his Shiva along with the original Shiva that was there. So that's how the Baal HaMor reconciles. That's how the Ramban reconciles. And the Baalei HaTosafot here give two possibilities of how to reconcile this Gemara with the previous Gemara. They say that maybe Rabbi Shimon agrees about the 3-day threshold with regards to Makom Rachok. Rabbi Shimon's din is only by Makom Karov. Do we say you can come back until the 7th day? But maybe Rabbi Shimon thinks that when it's a Makom Rachok, that the 3 days is the cutoff period and not the 7 days. So that's one way to reconcile between them. Or Tosafot actually rereads the Gemara here and says the Safek here in this case is not a Safek about to the person coming to join the group like we saw in the first case there. An outside person comes to join the group and we're determining, should he count with them or not count with them? Over there, as long as he shows up within the first 7 days of Avilut, I mean, all the way until the last moment, as long as they're Avilim, he joins their count, and he's done with them. He finishes up the Avilut with him. On the other hand, in our case over here, where the Gadol HaBayit travels out to the cemetery, this is the question here. What is the status of an individual now who comes, who didn't know the information before, now comes to join the group? Does he join the individuals who are already sitting Shiva? Or does he have to make his own count, or maybe follow the count of the Gadol HaBayit? The answer is, since the Gadol HaBayit is not with those individuals who are sitting Shiva earlier, because they started to sound Shiva as soon as they released the mate and gave it over to the other parties to go bury it, they became Avilim. So now, should he join them, but they don't have the Gadol HaBayit with them? Or should he join the Gadol HaBayit? And based on that, Tosafot says that's the difference between these two sugyot. Sugi before is talking about when the Gadol HaBayit is resident with the Avilim that exist, and then a party, a third person comes in and says, should I join them? And the answer is yes, you join them because the Gadol HaBayit is here. On the other hand, in our case, where third party shows up, and you have the Gadol HaBayit on the road, what is the din then? So now the answer is that if the Gadol HaBayit comes within 3 days from the Beit HaKavarot, then he joins the original Avilim. And that means that anybody else who showed up will also join the Avilim. On the other hand, if he doesn't come back within 3 days, then he takes a separate count from those that stayed behind. And an individual who shows up, that individual will then be governed by the Godel HaBayit and not by the other parties that originally started their Avilut as soon as they walked away from the mate. And the way that he reconciles the Sugyot is to say the previous Sugyot is talking about where the person comes did not know about the Avilut up front. Since he did not know about the Avilut up front, as soon as he shows up and the Godel HaBayit is there as part of that group, he gets joined to that group and his Shiva is over with the remainder of the individuals. On the other hand, in our case over here, the Godel HaBayit started the Avilut together. They had the information together. And since they had the information and they started, quote-unquote, their Avilut together, then only if he shows up within 3 days does he join their count. Otherwise, he goes off on his own count. And that will have impact on the other party that's coming in to join the group here. If he joins the group, which will be everybody together, if the Godel HaBayit comes back within 3 days, or does he go after the Godel HaBayit who comes back after 3 days and not with the original group who is sitting Avilut? Again, the difference in the cases is the first case was talking about a case where they did not know the information and now they're kind of joined the group and the Godel HaBayit is part of that original group. But over here where everybody knew of each other in the beginning, except for that Oreach, the other party that didn't know about it, but the Godel HaBayit and the other parties know about each other. So therefore, when they know about each other, then only within its end 3 days is it considered to be a unified Avilut. Whereas if they're already more than 3 days apart, it's not a unified enough Avilut for them to join together, and then the Godel HaBayit will have his own independent count. If he has an independent count, then another party that comes to join them when he finds out about the Avilut will join the Godel HaBayit and not the other individuals. So that's as far as reconciling the two Gemarot. Now, what is the halacha with regards to sending the mate off and those that turn their back and go back home? So now, part of the question might relate to which way does the Godel HaBayit go? So, the Torah, saying this in the name of his father, the Rosh, that everything goes after the Godel HaMishpacha. Wherever the Godel HaBayit goes, that's where it goes. So therefore, if he stays back with the parties that are starting their Avilut right away, then everybody counts their Avilut from the parties that stay behind. Even though those that go to bury the mate are only going to start their Avilut from Yishtama Golel, nevertheless, when they return home, their minyan is along with the Godel HaBayit, with those parties that start their Avilut from the time that they release the mate to go to the burial. On the other hand, if the Godel HaBayit goes with the mate to the burial, then everybody's bound by that, and even those that stay behind only start their Avilut Mishtiistama Golel. From the time that the kever, the person is buried, then that's when everybody starts their Avilut. So according to the Torah, and it's the name of his father, the Rosh, it's very simple. The Godel HaBayit is the determining factor here no matter what. If he stays behind, that's the core Avilut, that's the Ikar Avilut, and everybody's bound by that. If he goes with the mate, then the Ikar Avilut will start with the burial of the mate, and everybody else is drawn after that, and that's where the Avilut count goes for everybody. On the other hand, the data Tosfot is that it's not that way, but rather it always goes the Chumrah, which is that if the Godel HaBayit goes along with the mate, everybody counts from Stimata Golel. Everybody counts from the time that the mate is buried. But on the other hand, if the Godel HaBayit stays back and he counts with the original parties and the other people go out to bury the mate, then he is the governing factor as far as all those stay behind. Those that go to bury the mate, they will practice Avilut from now because of Kavod of Godel HaBayit. So they'll practice Avilut now. And then their real Avilut will only start Mishistama Golel. But because of the Kavod of the Gadol, they're Noeg Avilut Miyad. So that's the position of the Balei HaTosafot. So the Balei HaTosafot say that you always have your Avilut start at the later time, which is that if the Godel HaBayit is going to the cemetery, he governs, and everybody starts at a later time. If the Godel HaBayit stays behind, then everybody starts the Avilut right away. For those that stay behind, because that's their real Avilut. For those that are going to bury the mate, because they have to give kavod to the Godel HaBayit, and they have to keep Avilut, and then when they bury the mate, they will start their own Avilut at that point in time. Now, obviously, there are some that say that this is all qualified, but the Gemara says here that they return within 3 days. If they don't return within 3 days, maybe they're not governed by the people behind at all. But then we have the Shulchan Aruch, who brings down this halacha on the Beit Yosef, and he seems not to paskin like the Torah, nor like the Balei HaTosafot. which is Ematai Matchilin Avilut. When does Avilut start? So it's in Simen Shin Ayin Hey in Yoredeya. And over there, the Shulchan Aruch says, Mi Shadargam Lishlach HaMeit L'Medina Acheret L'Kuvro. They send off the mate to another area to bury it. Ve'inan Yodim Ha'itai Yikaver. And they don't know when the mate will actually be buried. Me'et Sheyachzeru Bneihem Melalvot Matchilim Nenot Shiv'ah V'Shloshim. Those people that are staying behind, from the moment they turn their back on the mate, they begin Shiv'ah V'Shloshim U'Matchilim Litabel. They begin their Avilut. V'Acholchim Imo. Those that go along with the Gadol Shebabayit, Monim Mishikaver. They count from the time that it's buried. Vim Gadol Mishpachal Lochimo. The Gadol Shebabayit goes with them. Af Elish Bekanei Monim Elishim Mishikaver. Then the people that are left behind also don't count until the burial. So here you have the Beit Yosef saying that, number one, the Gadol Habayit governs here. And that means that if the Gadol Habayit goes with the parties out to the burial, then we follow the Gadol Habayit and the Avilut starts in the time that you bury them. That sounds like the tour. But you could be Medayik, and this is the way the Aruch HaShulchan is Medayik in the Shulchan Aruch, that if the Gadol Habayit stayed behind, then the people that stayed behind would keep Avilut with the Gadol Habayit, but those that went out to the burial, they would only start their Avilut once they buried the mate. Now that's not like the Torah, because the Torah says the Gadol Habayit governs wherever he is. It's also not like the Balei HaTosfot, because the Balei HaTosfot said that when the Gadol Habayit stays back, then those people go to bury, they, even though their Avilut only start once they bury the mate, they still have to do, because of the Kavod HaGadol, they have to start their Avilut right away. According to Shulchan Aruch, that's not the case. If the Gadol Habayit grows, then everybody starts from the burial. If the Gadol Habayit stays behind, then everybody who stays behind starts their Avilut right away, and those people going to the burial, they only start their Avilut once the burial is complete. Aruch HaShulchan wants to suggest that the Beit Yosef is basically passing like the Rif and the Rambam, who leave this halacha out completely. So that's why, since the Rambam and the Rif don't mention this, maybe the Beit Yosef is not worried about the Chumrah of the Tosafot. And therefore they say that if the Gadol Habayit goes out to the burial, then everybody follows him. If the Gadol Habayit stays behind, then he governs whoever stays behind. But those that go out will only be count from the time of Stimata Golel, and they'll be independent of those parties that stayed behind. Then the Beit Yosef, the Shulchan Aruch, gives a definition of what Gadol Habayit is. He says, Gadol Habayit hainu debeita samuch alei, that the household depends on him. Vigrire gulo batrei, and everybody follows his positions or follows his guidance. Loshna ach, loshna ben katan. It's not necessarily the oldest member of the household, even though that normally the oldest member of the household will have this position, but nevertheless, it could be a brother. It could be a katan, it could be a younger child. He does say that it should be over the age of bar mitzvah, but whoever the person is that everybody seeks counsel of, and the one who conducts the affairs of the estate and of the family, that's a person that's determined to be Gadol Habayit. Because of that, today, in general, the position or the determination of Gadol Habayit has gone by the wayside, because we rarely find this person or individual is defined as Gadol Habayit like they did in their days. And therefore, in most instances, people are not choshesh for this issue of Gadol Habayit. In addition, with regards to burying in Eretz Yisrael, the practice is that if the people accompany the mate to Eretz Yisrael, and part of the family stays behind, and then they leave the mate at the airport or on the plane, when they turn their backs on it, their Avelut begins. And those that travel to Eretz Yisrael, their Avelut will only begin when the burial happens. So there actually will be a difference between the duration of the Avilut of those that stay behind and those that go. And there's no reconciling between them because we don't have a din of Gadol Shebabayit. The only way we could have reconciled between them or had them overlap with each other is we still had a din of Gadol Habayit. But since we don't have this din of Gadol Habayit, there is no reconciling between the two counts. And you actually keep separate counts for the family members that stay behind versus the family members that accompany the mate to go to Eretz Yisrael. So you could have it when those family members return to Chutz La'aretz, that they will actually have a longer duration of Avilut than those that did not accompany the mate all the way to the burial. And that's as far as this Gemara is concerned, gives you a summary of the different views of the Rishonim, as well as the Halacha according to these Rishonim, and then we just discussed the Halacha Lamasa with regards to sending a mate to a place where not everyone's going to accompany them. Because of the lack of Gadol Habayit today, it becomes less relevant and everybody counts from when their Avilut would start. Either when you turn your face away from the mate, you stop accompanying the mate. That's what Rava taught us here, that that's considered like stimat golel for you, and that begets the beginning of avelut. Whereas, if you accompany the mate, then only once the mate is buried will you begin the avelut. Now the Gemara continues. Rabbi Shimon Omer, afilu ba b'yom mishvi mimakom karov moneh imahem. Even if he comes from a close place, if he's up to the seventh day, then he counts with him. I'm Rochir Bagamdo, I'm Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul, I'm a rabbi. This is a qualification that we spoke about before. That's as long as the people are still sitting shiva, meaning that there's still people there consoling them, paying a shiva gal, so they're still sitting. But if not, then mixat yom kukulo, they're already finished avelut. You can't then join their count if they're already done with avelut. By Rav Anan in arub amod v'lo amdu. What happens if those individuals that came to console them, or the avelim themselves, had begun to stand up, but they had yet to stand up? They haven't physically stood up, but they basically have ended their avelut in their minds. Mahu, what's the din there? Teiku. That we leave as an unresolved issue. And again, because avelut, in general, we pass on the hakel, then in this instance also we would go the hakel, which means that we would assume that that's still part of the avelut. And if the person shows up at that point in time, he will join their avilut and may finish his avilut in a very short period of time. Gemirei chavrei de Rabbi Ava Barchia, may Rabbi Abba. The peers of Rabbi Ava Barchia learned from Rabbi Ava, umanu, that's Rabbi Zera. V'amrila chavrei de Rabbi Zera, may Rabbi Zera. That the peers of Rabbi Zera learned from Rabbi Zera, umanu, Rabbi Abba brei de Rabbi Chia bar Abba. He's the one who learned this. He were taught this. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Halacha ki Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel betreifot. The loch is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in Treifot, but loch is Rabbi Shimon ba'avel. The loch is like Rabbi Shimon and Avel. Now, ki Rabbi Shimon Avel hadamran. Like the halach is like Rabbi Shimon and Avel is this case here, that we count 7 days, and all those 7 days, if somebody shows up at that period of time from Makom Karov, they join the count of the individuals that are there, and that's what it means that we paskin like Rabbi Shimon. Ki Rabbi Shimon Gamliel betreifot, what does that mean that we paskin like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel betreifot? It's none. B'nei mei ayim shenikvu. If you have intestines that have been punctured, now, intestines that are punctured are now a problem of treifut. They're treifa. But, velecha sot matan. But nevertheless, there is some liquid or fat that is sealing them up. Ksheira, divrei Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that that's no longer a problem of treifa. My lecha, what is this liquid that is stopping up the hole? Am Rav Kahana, shirka de me'ayot. It's the fats of the intestines. The nagya fig agav duchaka. Because of the pressure of that which is going through the intestines, it presses the fat up against the hole, and it plugs the hole. So Amar, man duhu, somebody said, iske ve'esik, I should be zochet to be olad Eretz Yisrael, v'gamar l'shmaitetam mipumei demarei, and I'll be able to hear this directly from the person who said it. Kisalik, this individual, when he went to Eretz Yisrael, ashkechei the Rabbi Abba, brei the Rabbi Chir Ba'avo, who's supposedly the Bala Memra here, Amalei, Amar Mar Alocha Rabbi Shimon Gamliel betreifot. Did you really say that the Alocha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and treifot? Amalei, Ano, what I said was, Ein Alocha. The Alocha is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So Amrei, Rabbi Shimon ba'Avel Mai. He said, what about Rabbi Shimon in Avel? What did you say there? Amalei, Ploktaninu. That's a Machloket. Didmar. Because we have in Machloket Amoraim, Rav Chista Amar Alocha. Chista says Alocha is like Rabbi Shimon. V'chein Amar Rabbi Yochanan Alocha. Yochanan agrees that the locha is like Rabbi Shimon. Rav Nachman Amar in locha. Rav Nachman says the locha is not like Rabbi Shimon. Ve in locha Rabbi Shimon betreifot. Ve locha Rabbi Shimon bavel. And the Gemara concludes that the locha is not like Rabbi Shimon all betreifot because ones who said or supposedly said that the locha is like him, when we and asked them, they retracted it and said, no, that's not the case. I said that the locha is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Therefore, the locha is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. On the other hand, the locha is like Rabbi Shimon bavel. Even though we have a machloket amoraim, because of the principle that we had all along, the mashmol locha divrei mekel ba'avel. Since we always go after the mekel opinion ba'avel, the locha is like that opinion over here. Al kol ha'metim kulan midachem itilto harizeh mishubach. With any one of the other krovim besides his parents, if he rushes them to get buried, that is praiseworthy. Al aviv imo harizeh miguneh. By his parents, if he's pushing to get them buried, he's trying to do it in a quick manner. That is considered to be unacceptable. That's like he's trying to rush them off and get rid of them. He has to be more reserved in his energies towards burying his parents to show that he's not trying to rush them off. Haya Erev Shabbat or Erev Yom Tov, on the other hand, if time is pressing and it's of the need, meaning that it's Erev Shabbat or Erev Yom Tov, harizeh mishubach, then even rushing to bury the parents is mishubach, she'no seh lechvod aviv imo, because that is actually their honor. Because if he doesn't get them buried before Shabbat or before Yom Tov, they're going to sit around all of Shabbat and all of Yom Tov, and that would be negative kavod for the parents. So by expediting the burial, he's actually providing kavod to his parents by not having them to stay around for those extra days. So in general, he should be more reserved in the process of burying his parents. But if it's necessitated by the kavod amate, then you can expedite it in order to be a full kavod amate. Then by other relatives, that doesn't apply. You should bury them as fast as possible. Kol ha-meitim gulan ratza mema'it b'isko, ratza enu mema'it. And with any of the other relatives, if he wants to reduce or diminish his work, he can. If he doesn't, he doesn't. But alaviv alimo mema'it. By parents, you must desist or reduce the amount of work that you are doing. Now, over here, it's somewhat questionable. Tosafot asked the question. Wait a minute. What's this case over here? We had just had before that, first of all, for an avel, he's a surba malacha kol shiva. He's not allowed to work for all 7 days. We just had in yesterday's daf about the possibility of 3 days. After 3 days, he might be able to work. Machloket rishonim as to whether that's only someone in Eimlo Mayocha that doesn't have anything to eat, or is that by all of Avilim Maglaik according to the Rashbam. But nevertheless, there's still a restriction of Isur Malacha by everybody else. So what's going on over here? We're talking about by other Krovim, it's optional. By his parents, he must desist from Malacha. So Tosfot later on in the Masechta on Daf Chav Zayin Amud Aleph says, Perish Baguntris Bischorato, that's dealing in his business dealings. Venir B'Dover HaOved Gamar. It's talking about something that's a Dover HaOved, which is Mutar for the Avel to do. So therefore, Gabay HaKola Meitum Gulan, by any other mate, Ratzai Memate, Bischor Ratzai Nememate. By a Dover HaOved, you have the option to let it go, or the option to engage in it to take care of the Dover HaOved. On the other hand, when it comes to parents, you don't have that option, you have to give it up, even by a case of Dover HaOved. By all the other krovim that you mitabel for them, you can lower your clothing off the shoulder, or you may don't have to do that. But by your parents, you must do this. So now here, this is a case of some practice that we do not have today. We'll discuss in a section why we don't do this today. But they used to take their cloak off of their shoulder to indicate that they were avelim. So now, here, by parents, you must do this activity. By non-parents, you have the option. So now, Masa b'gadol ador echad shemet aviv. One of the gdolei ador, their parent passed away. Bigesh lachlotz, and he wanted to lower his cloak or his clothing off his shoulder. Bigesh gadol acher shimo lachlotz. And the other gadol ador that was with him wanted to do the same thing. V'nimna v'lo chalatz, and he stopped and didn't do this. Amar Abaye, Abaye explains, Gadol Dor, who is the Gadol Dor here? Rabbi. That's referring to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Gadol Ador Shimo, who was the Gadol Dor that was with him? Rabbi Yaakov Ba'acha. That was Rabbi Yaakov Ba'acha who was accompanying him. V'ikad Amri Gadol Ador, Rabbi Yaakov Ba'acha. That the Gadol Dor, who was the Avel, was Rabbi Yaakov Ba'acha. And the Gadol Ador Shimo was Rabbi. Now, Bishlam, all the man Amri, it makes sense when it says Gadol Ador Shimo, Rabbi, that Rabbi was only accompanying figure. He wasn't the Avel himself. Hainu de Nimno Velo Chalatz. That's why he didn't do it. He didn't do the chalitza. Why wouldn't you go ahead and do the chalitza? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel nasiava v'kuli ama mechayvi b'lemichlotz. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who was the father of Rabbi, was a nasi, and therefore everybody is obligated to be chalitz. And therefore, kasho, it's a problem. So let's understand this. The avel himself, we're talking about the parent of the avel. So the parent of the avel, it makes sense that the child would be choletz, would take the thing off the shoulder. So whether it was Rabbi Yaakov Ba'acha, or whether it was Rabbi, it was their parent, then they exposed their shoulder. On the other hand, the other individual who was with them, who was the Gadol Ador, it would have been beneath their dignity to remove their cloak from their shoulder. They would do it out of respect for the other party that was there, but it would be beneath their dignity, and they shouldn't do it because they're not availing for their parent. It's not their parent that has passed away. So now let's look at the two possible setups. If Rav Yaakov Ba'acha is the Gadol Ador, then for his father, he should have been Choletz. And then Rabbi, who's accompanying him, Rabbi, who's the Nasi, and he's the Gadol Ador, it's beneath his dignity to do it. So he didn't do it. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov doesn't do it, so he won't force Rabbi to have to do it. So that situation makes sense. Versus the other way around. If Rabbi is the one who's the Avel, meaning that Rabbi's father, Rav Shimon Gamliel, passed away, then Rabbi should be Choletz. On the other hand, Rav Yaakov Ba'acha, it's not his father, he shouldn't be choletz. But Rabbi's father, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, is the Nasi. If he's the Nasi, that obligates everybody to be choletz. And then Rav Acher B'Yaakov should also have been choletz. So why did Rabbi not be choletz in order to protect Yaakov B'Acha? Both of them were obligated in the chalitza. And that's what the Gemara says, kasha. If you set up the scenario in that way, that it was Rabbi who was the Avel and Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha was the accompanying individual, it doesn't make so much sense. So the story must have been in a case where Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha was the Avel and Rabbi was accompanying him, and they didn't do this Chalitza because it was beneath the dignity of the Nasi of Rabbi to do this. The reason that we don't do Chalitza today is, again, for something similar, according to some, like we said before, by Kfiat Amita and Atifa de Rosh, which we would just become a laughingstock of the non-Jews, or would just be seen as something like a clown activity. That's one way to explain why we don't do it these days. On the other hand, the Aruch HaShulchan points out the reason that we don't do this today is because our clothing doesn't work like that. And their day, thinking about a Roman toga, the way it was set up, you could easily pull it off your shoulder, or there was a way to have it come off your shoulder. Today, the way we wear clothing, taking something off your shoulder is not meaningful, and it doesn't even really work with the clothing that we have. And since the clothing that we have is not even relevant within the world of Chalitza, that's why we're not Choletz. So that's the reason why we don't have this practice today. Now the Gemara is going to continue with these distinctions between the parents and other Avelim for other Krovim. This is one of the most significant ones, which is that on all other Meitim, Mr. Lachar La Mejom, after 30 days, you can get a haircut. It's a loose, subjective idea until his friends tell him, oh my gosh, you look terrible. Rashi says, Gidel Peri, you'll tear me die. The hair has grown way too long. You look disheveled. You look terrible. So, that's when you can go ahead and get a haircut. So that has an undefined amount of time. And generally, it's based on the individuals who come along and tell you. Now, what would be interesting here is that people who know the halacha and then come and tell you, whether that really should work in that case. Because they know the halacha, they're telling you this in order to get the haircut. Maybe they should not be good enough individuals to be the determining factor here. But you should have the individuals who really don't know the halacha or not saying it because of the halacha. And they're really saying it because you look disheveled and you look terrible and they're telling you to get a haircut. So that is somewhat of a question about who's the one who can make this determination or make this statement. And again, it's very loose and we're generally makeyol with these types of things because we're dealing with avilut. Although there's some people who are makbid to wait a little longer because it's parents. And we see along here that kibud avim requires a little more in terms of avilut. For any of the other meitim after 30 days, you're allowed to then go and join a simcha to be a part of celebrations. For his parents, you have to wait 12 months. He says, he defines this as being simchat mireyut. Simchat mireyut is a party that involves friends getting together to celebrate. Meitve. Is that really true? Ule simcha mireyut lamidyom. For Simcha and Mereyut, we say that's 30 days. Kasho, that leaves us with a problem here. Because over here, the way that Rabbi Bar Chana is suggesting is that that qualification is telling us that in terms of other Krovim, after 30 days, Simcha Mereyut is allowed. But that's only Simcha Mereyut. That's when friends get together. But a real Simcha, like a marriage or something that involves a tremendous amount of Simcha, that even other relatives you would not allow to go to even after 30 days. Well, if you do say that, that means that both other relatives and the parents are the same with regards to after the 30 days with a simcha. That's a real simcha. Simcha mereyut will be the nafkamina between them. For other relatives, you're allowed to go after 30 days. For parents, you won't be allowed to go for the 12 months. The problem with that is that we have a braita, meitaveilu, simcha mereyut lamidyom. For simcha mereyut, it's only 30 days. That means that mereyut and simcha are separate. And for Mereyut, you're governed by 30 days, and so too for Simcha, you're governed by 30 days. After 30 days, Krovim are allowed to go and do whatever they want in terms of Avelut. It's only for parents that it extends beyond that point in time. Kasha, that's a question, or a difficulty, a refutation of the position that we just stated. A Meimer Matni Hochi. Meimer had the member of Rabbi Rachana this way. Omer Rabbi Rachana, the Simcha Mereyut, Mutar Likanes La'altar. When it comes to getting together with friends, you can get together right away. V'atanya l'simcha shloshim l'mereyut shloshim. Don't we have a braita that says that simcha and mereyut have to last for 30 days? Lokasha habirisuta habipurnata. That depends on what type of simcha mereyut is. If it's a way Rashi describes it here, is that they have an agreement between their friends that invite each other over, and they party to each other. So if you're already obligated because you're already invited out by the other friends, and now it's your turn to host, then you can do that. You can host in this period of time because the abrogation already happened before the avilut. On the other hand, if you start now and you begin this process and you invite everybody over, that would be inappropriate and you wouldn't be allowed to do this. Now, based on this second lashon, the way it would work is this. For all other relatives, simcha mereut would be mutar right away, as long as that it was an obligation that was already established beforehand. Simcha, a real simcha, that would not be allowed until after 30 days. And again, simcha mereut, that was not a pre-existing obligation, also would only start after 30 days. For parents, then they both would be precluded. Both simcha mereut and a real simcha would be prevented or inappropriate for the entire 12-month period. And that is the Minhag Yisrael, that in the 12 months for parents, people do not attend a simcha mereut, they don't go to a kiddush, they don't go to a place where people are fraternizing together or socializing together. And they also don't go to a simcha shel mitzvah, they don't go to a wedding and so on and so forth. Now, Tosfot over here mentions that even if you sit with the people that are serving the meals, that is still being a part of the simcha, and that's not enough to separate yourself out, even though there is a practice among many to go to weddings and sit on the outside. Again, this practice doesn't seem to be condoned so much by the halacha. But again, we're dealing with minhagim here, and you should ask your local rav what the minhag is, or whether that is considered to be participating or not participating in the simcha. Tosafot does bring down from Masechet Smachot that a suda mitzvah would be allowed. He says, what's a suda mitzvah? He says, a suda at Brit Milah might be allowed, even during the time period of Avilut. And he says, because that's why we don't say a simcha memono by the Brit Milah. That's why we don't say Shechianu, because of Tzara de Yanuka. So it's not a full-fledged simcha, and maybe the person would be permitted to attend that type of simcha shel mitzvah. Again, I've seen most of the Golim are very makpid on this during the 12 months for their parents, that they go to no social interactions, gatherings, or smachot, and they're very makpid not to do that for the entire year. Tosafot does note here that it's clear from our Gemara that as far as the regel is concerned, the regel will overturn or eliminate Shiva. It will do the same for Shloshim, but it has no impact on Shnemasar Chodesh on the 12 months. Tosafot just proves it from the Gemara, but does not give the logic behind why that might be the case. The easiest way to explain that is that when it comes to Shiva and the regel, the two are irreconcilable. They cannot coexist. Shiva and the regel are opposites, and therefore when it comes to the regel and Shiva, the regel overrides Shiva, or Shiva is eliminated. As far as Shloshim is concerned, the truth is that the two are not irreconcilable because Shloshim and the regel have the same dinim. They actually have the same restrictions. So what there is irreconcilable is the fact that you need to do something like kavod regel. Shloshim is problematic because it prevents you from doing what you're supposed to do before the regel, which is why there is restrictions during the regel in order to force you or encourage you to do it beforehand. So because of Kabbalah regel, we override or we overturn the Shloshim in order that you will come into the regel in a proper state, both of mind and being. That was why we saw yesterday that there were some opinions, actually, if you did not take advantage of the opportunity to do it for the Kabbalah regel, you actually did not override Shloshim, and Shloshim would remain in place. As far as Yud Bet Chodesh is concerned, the two can coexist, meaning that the regel and Yud Bet Chodesh are not irreconcilable, and that might be why the regel does not have any impact on the Yud Bet Chodesh. Now, the truth is, there is a little bit of a flaw in that logic, which is the fact that when it comes to Yud Bet Chodesh, a person that is an avel for their parents does not cut their hair until they are gorim bo, until their friends tell them that they look terrible. So that is not exactly reconcilable with the regel, because for the regel you would need to cut your hair in order to be in a proper state going into the regel. What you have to say is that when it comes to Kibud Av Va'Em, certain aspects of Kibud Av Va'Em, which intensify the Avelut here, override the necessity of Kovod HaRegel, and that's why the regel does not terminate or eliminate the Yud Bet Chodesh. Al kol ha-meitim kulam korea tefach, al vivimo ad shigilet libo. For all the other krovim, when you tear the kriya, you have to just tear it at tefach. Whereas for your parents, you have to tear it until you have exposed your heart. Amar libo, my kra. What's the pasuk that tells you you have to tear at least a tefach? It says, ve'yachzech David b'bigadav v'yikareim, that he grabbed onto his bigadim, his clothing, and he rent them. So now, if he rents his garments, he needs to be ochez, achiza to hold them. Any achiza pachol mitevach. You need at least a tevach. And here it's where David's tearing kriya over Shaul and Yonatan, who are obviously not his parents. And we see that a tefach would be sufficient. Al kol ha-meitim ulan afilu lavush ha-sarach ha-lukim enu kurel el-yon. When a person is mitabel on other krovim, then he only has to tear the outermost garment. Al aviv v'al-imo kureyat kulan. Whereas for his parents, he must tear all the clothing that he has. Every layer of clothing must be torn. Vapi kar suto eno me'akevet. Now Rashi says that because Sato is like his turban, you don't have to rip it. On the other hand, the Aruch and others suggest that it means your undershirt. You can tear everything down to your undershirt. Echad ha'ish v'echad ha'isha. Man and woman are equal in this way, and they both have to tear kriya. Now it's only really relevant in terms of parents. With regards to other krovim, they're only tearing the most outer garment, so there's no issue of tzniut, and therefore it would be equal for men and women. The difference might be with regards to parents, where you're tearing every piece of clothing there. So where's there a difference? The Tanakhama says, Echad ha'ish v'echad ha'isha. Shimon Elazar omer, ha'isha korat et ha'tachton. First she tears the lower garment, u'machzirato l'acharei, and then she turns it around so she'll be behind her. Chozeret v'korat et ha'elyon, and then she goes ahead and tears the upper garment, so therefore the two tears are not lined up. The outer tear and the inner tear are not up because of tzniut. Al kol ha'meitim kulan ratza mavdil, kamei safa shelo ratza enu mavdil. You have a choice of how you rip it. Al aviv v'imo mavdil, you have to separate it. Here there's a machloket in the Rishonim had to explain it. We'll go with Rashi on the daf. Rashi on the daf says, like for instance, in a polo shirt. A polo shirt has an existing tear, quote unquote. It has an opening, an existing opening. If you were simply to pull that opening and tear it further, is that really noticeable as a tear? So for other relatives, that would suffice. Whether you tear it up at the collar level, or whether you tear it where the opening already exists, that would be fine for other relatives. For parents, you must tear from the collar level because then it will be distinguishable and obvious that you are tearing it. You can't continue to tear down the neck line. On the other hand, there are Rishonim, including Rashi himself, I think on the Rif, that say just the opposite and say that the tearing from the open space already is where you want to tear because that makes a bigger tear and it's more obvious and visible versus tearing from up at the collar, which is a less visible type of tear because it's stitched on separately. So there are opinions in both directions, but what we see again is this idea that by parents, we are more machmir. And Rabbi Yehuda says, Kol kriya shenu mavdil kamei safa shelo enu ela kera shel tiflut. That if you don't tear it in that way, which separates it from the natural tear of the garment, and it makes it obvious that you're tearing it, then that's not really tearing the garment. You have to tear in a way that is visible, and that's true both of parents and of krovim. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, my time with Rabbi Yehuda, dechtiv. Echzeg bivgadav egreim l'shnaim kreim. It says that he rent his garments in Udeshem Lishnaim. Obviously it's into two parts. But rather it's obvious that they've been torn and that there are two pieces here. So you have to tear it in a way which makes it visible and obvious to the other parties that you've torn it. On any other relative, you're allowed to give a rough stitch after the Shiva. And then you're allowed to fully stitch it back up after shloshim, the tear in the clothing. Aviv elimo shalel la'achar lamed. You're allowed to do a rough stitch after 30 days. Ve'enu me'acher le'olam. You can never stitch it back up properly. Again, this idea of distinguishing parents that pain and that tear for the parents can never be rectified and can never be stitched back up. Ve'isha shalel to la'altar. For a woman, you do the rough stitch to bring it back up. Mipnei kvoda, because of tzniut and kvoda. Therefore, you stitch it up right away in a rough way, but so that it's still obvious that there was a tear over there. With any other meitim, you can cut with a knife, or you can cut with scissors, or with your hands. But when it's parents, you only do it biyad. The understanding here is that if you cut with the kli, you'll get a much cleaner cut, and it'll be easier to stitch up afterwards. So therefore, by an other mate, you can do it either way, because in the end, you're actually allowed to stitch it back up after shloshim. By parents, where you can never stitch it up anyway, then you can only do it biyad, because we don't want any fine cuts. We want a rough cut. We want a real rip that goes on there, because you're never going to seal it up anyway. By other meitim, you're allowed to tear the inner garment, meaning that if you're wearing a coat or a jacket on the outside, you don't have to tear that. You only have to tear the inner garment, the shirt that you're wearing on the inside. For his parents, he has to be Korea on the outermost garment, because you have to make the tear most obvious and clear to other people that you have the tear there. Today, the practice usually is by Avilut of parents that the Chevra Adisha starts to cut with a knife. They cut through the collar area, through the stitching, and then the Avel themselves continues by hand to tear Kriya. So therefore, we accomplish both. We have it both biyad. We end up cutting through the stitching and deep down towards the lave. In general, for parents, we tend to tear on the left side as the minog, towards the heart, to expose the heart. And for other relatives, we tear on the right side, because there's no issue of Megala Libo, only an issue of a tefach. Am Rav Chista v'chein l'nasi. The nasi has the same din as parents. Meitave, is that really true? Lo shvu l'aviv yimau ele'a ichui bovad. The only thing that is comparable between parents and the nasi is the stitching up. So it sounds from the Braita that the only thing that's compared between aviv yimau and the nasi is ichui bovad, is the stitching up, but nothing else. So Gemara says, my lava filu nasi. Is that statement true also by nasi? The Gemara says, lo, barmi nasi. That's the exclusion of the nasi. Nasi ashchiv. There was a case where the nasi passed away. Amale Rav Chista, le Rav Nachman bar Ami, or the Rav Chanan bar Rava. Kapi asita. Flip over the mortar. Vekumala, stand up on it. Va'achve kriya la'alma, and show that you're doing a kriya to everybody, so everybody can see it. It means similar to a parent, where the kriya has to be on the outside, has to be obvious in public, so too you have to do that by the nasi. Then the Gemara says, ala chacham choletz miyamin. For the chacham, you take off your shoulder from the right side. Al av beitin mismol. And for the av beitin, you take it off your left shoulder. Al nasi mikan ugan. For the nasi, you do it from both sides. So here we're talking about gradations. The Chacham is a certain status. Av Beit Din is above him, and the Nasi is even above him. So Tan Rabbanan, we have a Braita now. Chacham Shemeit, a Chacham that passes away, Beit Midrasho Batel. His whole Beit Midrash, all of his Talmidim are Batel, and they join in the Avelut. Av Beit Din Shemeit, Av Beit Din, again, was on a higher level. We just saw that with returns to taking the garment off the shoulders. If he passes away, Kol Bate Midrasho should be Iro Batelin. Any Beit Midrash in that city is Batel to participate in the Avelut. V'nichnasim the Beit Knesset. Then they go into the Shul, Umishanin et Mikoman. And they change their locations. Yoshvim Betzafon, Yoshvim Bedarom. Those that normally sat on the north sit on the south. Yoshvim Darom, Yoshvim Betzafon. And those that normally sat on the south sit on the north. Nasi Shemait, on the other hand, when a Nasi passes away, who's even a higher stature, Bate Midrasho Kulan Betelim. Then all the Bate Midrasho Tar Batel, Ubnei HaKnesset Nichnasim the Beit Knesset, V'gorim Shiv'ah V'yotzim. Then they go into Shul, there is no davening B'tzibor, because everybody is an Avel. And the only thing they get together with is to read the Torah, to have the Aliyot and read the Torah publicly together, because that, according to most poskim, is a Chavat HaTzibor, it can only be accomplished through the Tzibor. And then they go out, and everything else is done individually. Rishu Ben Karcho Mer Lo She'elchu V'Taylu B'Shul. Just because now what? They're kicked out of the Beit Midrash, they're kicked out of the Shul, so now they should just go out on a Tiyul and walk around the Shul doing nothing. They sit and they are silent. We do not say over any Agadah or any Torah in the Beit HaAvel. That he had the practice of saying over Shmua and Agadah in the Beit HaAvel. We paskin like the Tanakhama here, that we do not say any over any Shmua Vagado. We saw that already earlier from Hanik Dom, plus the fact that B'gudei Hashem Misam Chelev, that we do not learn Torah in the Beit HaAvel, with the exception of the same things by Tisha B'Av, where you have permission to learn them because they're not Misam Chelev, and they're really relevant to the Avel himself. The one exception is the practice that I mentioned yesterday, is in some Batei Avel, they learn Mishnayot. The best way to deal with that is to learn Mishnayot that are relevant, like Elu Megalchim, like this parak here, are Mishnayot in Seder Tumah, which are relevant to the Dinim of the Mate and the Avel. But the practice amongst Klai Yisrael, even to do it for Mishnayot in general, they spell out the name of the Mate. This comes really from the Kabbalistic side and not from the Halachic side. It's based on the Shla and the Arizal. The Shla mentions that Mishnah and Neshama are the same letters, and the Arizal says that Limud Mishnayot is terrific, both for the person who's alive, as well as for the niftar, and therefore there's a schut in learning Mishnayot for the mate. Now, none of them indicate that you should do it during Shiva, they just generally say you should learn Mishnayot, or even Nishmat the mate. But the practice amongst Klal Yisrael, because of that Kabbalistic side, became to learn Mishnayot in Beit HaAvel. There's really no source in Halacha for it, and there are poskim that have spoken out against it, And best, again, if you're going to learn Mishnayot and you're going to have to do it, then the best thing to do is to learn from areas of the Mishnayot that would be mutar for the Avel. There are some that suggest that if you do it, the Avel should not listen to the learning and then only say the Kaddish afterwards, so he's not a part of the learning. Although other poskim say there's no, once you're learning already, there's no reason that the Avel has to walk away from the learning that goes on. Okay, we're going to stop over here at the two dots on the top of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph.